did you guys order some ice? Because I got a bag of ice here. Thought you might need some ice.
Yes, there is a lot of ice around here. We get it. We're having a conversation here.
Hey, I thought you guys might need some ice.
What? Why would I need ice? We're surrounded by... Oh, what a day brightener.
And now, two guys who thought you might need some ice.
It's Mos Eisley Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mos Eisley Radio, episode 13. I'm just one of your hosts, Brooks Guthrie. Joining me, as always, is the fantastic Zachariah Brown. Zach, what's up?
What's up? How's it
Not
going?
Not much. In the morning to you.
Yeah, in the morning to you. By the way... Dude, what is up with getting 6 inches of snow and it's already gone?
Yeah.
I'm a little disappointed. I don't know if you're like a snow guy like myself, but I've already been skiing twice this year. So I was like ready for more snow. And
yeah, well, for those of you who don't know, Zach and I live in like Indiana, which is basically the middle of everything. And yeah, we got like 6 inches of snow. And
it was bad at some other place.
No, it's not. I'll give you that, but it was gone in like 4 or 5 days. Yeah, it was kind of ridiculous.
So apparently, okay. What's up, Midwest? Because did everyone just forget how to drive when the snow came?
Oh God, it was terrible.
I was talking to my cousin the other day, and he was like, "I was behind a guy in a Jeep, like not a Jeep Cherokee or like a Jeep Liberty or anything
like a Wrangler."
Wrangler.
Okay.
And it was like, it was a 4x4, and the guy was doing 10 miles an hour, and the roads were clear.
That's a bit ridiculous. Yeah. I noticed, like, when I was driving home, driving back to Bloomington just before it was snowing, and, like, everyone got retarded. Like, it was nighttime. Nobody had their lights on. People were, like, running red lights, making ridiculous turns. It's like the weather is about to change, and people just get retarded.
Yeah.
That being said.
Managed to wreck her car by herself.
Really?
Yep, but she's okay.
Well, that's good, I suppose. Yeah. So why don't we jump into the news? We got some pretty exciting things to talk about. So let's head over to news from the Galactic Republic.
This just in: Terrace is under attack by a Sith fleet.
The Sith Empire is now a serious threat for Pace.
As the war presses on, the Mandalorian blockade stands.
Citizens and dignitaries are urged to seek shelter as the planetary bombardment continues.
News from the Galactic Republic. We're rocking release rumor round 3 at this point.
Yeah, but this seems...
Well, this
okay,
is...
rumor, this it, at least is more... This is the most specific thing that's probably been released at
right,
this point.
Right. What started as a rumor has now turned into Sean Dahlberg of BioWare confirming a spring 2011 release target. Which is...
Yeah, target release date. So.
Yeah. So this started out as a rumor that popped up because of the CEO of EA, John Riccitiello, was having, you know, a conference call with people talking about their next fiscal year and, you know, where they expect to be getting revenue from and all those kinds of things. And he dropped that on their digital revenue side, they've got a number of initiatives, but one key driver will be the launch of our major MMO, which, as it stands today, is making progress towards a spring 2011 launch. Everybody was like, EA, MMO, clearly they're not developing anything other than the Old Republic.
Yeah.
So we kind of made that connection, and then Sean came in a couple days later and was like, yeah, this is our aim. And I don't know what you think about this, but this actually kind of changes a lot of what I was expecting for the next year of what we're going to be seeing, how things are going to be playing out. So what were your impressions? What do you think that's going to be different because of spring 2011?
Well, the interesting thing is I guess when you look at the history of MMOs and release dates, you tend to think that the second half of the year is the time that major MMOs typically are released. I guess Guild Wars was released in the springtime, now that I kind of think about it.
But it was free to play.
But it was a free to play game. And they have yet to announce that. Well, also based on that statement, that kind of makes me think that this isn't going to be a free to play game. Obviously,
it's certainly not.
Obviously, it's not. But what I was going to say is that they haven't pretty much came out and said what the payment subscription is going to be for this game. So we still don't know if it's going to be microtransaction. We kind of think it's going to be the WoW setup, to where it's just a monthly flat fee and that's it. But
yeah.
I'm getting off topic big time here. But basically, I think it's kind of an interesting choice for a target release date. And I kind of think that it's just that as a target date. And I kind of almost at this point wouldn't be shocked to see this get pushed back to fall.
Really?
2011. That's just my speculation, though. I don't know enough on the. I'm just saying I wouldn't be shocked if that happened at this point. Now, I don't know enough about the game, and I haven't seen enough of it. I know people we've talked to have basically expressed that they thought the game was a lot further along than what we've kind of been shown, I guess you'd say, in the most recent developer blogs and movies and things like that. And I've heard some people speculate that. I wish I had the clip, but I was listening to the Four Guys One Up podcast, and they had John Davison on there, and he was speculating that he thought it would be out this year.
Right.
Sure. And I think, based on what he saw,
I think most of us were, you know, I was totally expecting kind of October, November release date, which seemed kind of make sense a little bit for me, you know, just pre Christmas to get that whole kind of thing going. I don't know what the tentative release date for Cataclysm is, but this is one of those kind of.
Yeah. That was something I was thinking about is, I wonder if that has any impact on it whatsoever or not, because the theory with Cataclysm, I haven't followed WoW news in a while, but last I heard that it was supposed to come out like the end of the midsummer to late summer of this year.
Yeah, I think we're thinking like most people are thinking fallish of this year.
Well, and the interesting thing about that is this would even give time for that game to get released. All the surge will come back to WoW and then kind of taper off.
Yeah, that was a lot of people's impression was you know, they're aiming this release to catch right when people are getting tired of Cataclysm, because let's be honest, it's gonna happen. Even if you're a hardcore WoW player, you know, I just don't think that there's gonna be enough content, and I think Blizzard is beyond reclaiming that energy that a lot of that people had about the original game. So when people get bored of Cataclysm, you know, Tor is going to be right there to pick them up.
Well, you can't deny the fact that you look at games that came out in the past, like Warhammer Online was slated to be something that was going to be spectacular, and it kind of fell.
And it wasn't.
Yeah, it kind of fell short of that. And it kind of got released around the same time as Wrath of the Lich King did. I mean, you can't deny that WoW is just this giant MMO juggernaut. And everyone
It's a behemoth,
to,
yeah.
Yeah, and everyone has to plan around that. I don't know if this is exactly why this is getting pushed back. I mean, the obvious thing is just because the game might not be ready for that.
Yeah, and
they haven't started game testing yet. So that's the obvious thing, is the reason why it's getting held to next year is because for development purposes. But and the other thing I'd like to think is, I think Cataclysm might have something to do with it, just because, like I said, you've got 12 million people playing World of Warcraft, supposedly. I kind of bet those numbers a little bit smaller than that at this point. When they release an MMO, typically, or historically, I guess you would say, with the other expansions, there's a massive surge again in the game.
Right.
And people that haven't played the game in months, or maybe even the past year, come back and play the new stuff again, you know, whet their appetite, so to speak, and then they're just like, you know what, I remembered that I didn't like this game, or right. Or like, this was fun, but I got my months out of it, or 2 months out of it, and I'm done with it, which is kind of what happened with Wrath of the Lich King when it came out. So maybe EA is looking at this and going, we don't want to come out and release a game kind of going along side by side with WoW, and maybe want to push it back. But then again, I can't imagine that being it, because they've got something that's so different. It's not like it's another fantasy MMO. They've got something that people have been begging for, which is just a good sci-fi MMO.
This is true, but I think they're looking at the fact that they've got a really awesome, unique piece of... I'm an idiot. a really awesome setting, something that people have really been looking for to be done right for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So you take that, which obviously is going to be a huge draw for people, and then you combine that with people just getting worn out on WoW once again. And, when the two of those combine, you know, that's got to mean good news for everybody involved. And, I think at this point, there's going to have to be a switch over. Blizzard is working on a brand new MMO. There's got to be a point when they say, okay, WoW is getting put on more or less the back burner, and we're going to transition to focus on the new MMO. Yeah. And that crossover time is going to be perfect for Tor to grow its audience and just
find the right moment to unleash this game, because like you were saying, Star Wars is a major franchise and it's going to have a huge following, and they've got plenty of fans out there that they can just market this game to. So
based on what we know, I was fully expecting October, November release, which probably meant that, game testing was going to go along side by side with, the con season, you know, like PAX and Gamescom and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's now going to be game testing is probably going to take place in like the winter time, like post con season, and then maybe like PAX or something is where we'll actually see an announcement about the starting of testing? Or do you think that's still going to happen like earlier on, maybe late spring?
I think game testing is going to be something that'll probably start up within, I wouldn't be surprised to see it starting up in like April-ish, May, definitely around maybe the E3 time period.
Mm-hmm.
Beta testing is a whole different thing.
Well, yeah, that's. I mean, if they end up doing like a public beta type thing, that would definitely be slated later, much, much later in the year, maybe even early next year. Because as we've been seeing recently, a lot of games have been doing public betas like right up to their release, like Star Trek Online, Global Agenda, things like that have been doing open-ish betas right up to release.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised once the beta comes into play. I mean, either A, the release date will shortly follow that, or B, we'll already know the release date when the beta comes out.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the two things that you can expect with that. But so that being said, I kind of wouldn't be surprised to see the beta not start up till the end of this year, probably at the earliest. Game testing, it seems like one of those things where just to get the hype around it, you could start doing it either the week of or right around the E3 time period, maybe starting it right after E3, or giving out codes or things like that at E3 just to get people in on it. Because they typically do a lot of that kind of stuff at those conventions. And that just seems like the perfect time to do something like that.
That's the only other thing I'm worried about with this. I think the fact that they've pushed it back is great. That allows them to, you know, continue to work on the game. And I say pushed it back. We didn't even know when it was going to be coming out in the first place. But the fact that we're now into 2011 as a release, you know, I feel like that allows them to include a lot more things that people have been asking for, namely space, which a lot of people were speculating based on a 2010 release wasn't going to be in the game at first. So we'll see. But even then, like, I'm worried that we're not going to be able to keep up this hype machine between now and over a year from now.
Well, I think you'll be able to keep up the hype machine. The thing is I think a lot of the people that are on the hype machine right now, if they're not careful, they can easily burn themselves out.
This is true.
There's a lot of people that probably just kind of have seen the game in passing and that's it, and they haven't even thought about it, and they'll probably get more and more excited as more and more information gets released. Things like that, or people that haven't maybe not even heard of the game yet will start hearing about it, and you're starting to see pop up like on major websites and things like that, like feature cover stories on the game. So I imagine that just as more and more information gets released, people are going to hear about this, and the very casual news, I guess you'd say, glancer is going to hear about it. And you're not going to have, like, right now, I would say the community that is following this game is probably going to be what is the hardcore community.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Once more casual players start finding out about this game and hearing about it, the hype is going to build back up and actually probably get bigger. So
probably.
I wouldn't say the hype is probably going to die down. If anything, it's just the people that are hardcore about it might get a little burnout on it. But I think everyone will quickly get the fire kindled again once betas open up or game testing or whatnot.
Yeah, I guess I kind of lose track of that sometimes. You know, we're so invested in this game so early on. And we have our listeners and people who listen to the other podcasts and are part of the official community and all that kind of stuff. The fact is even like guilds sprouting up even now.
Yeah.
This game is well over a year from release.
How hardcore the fan base is. And
exactly.
And
but
they want specific things to be in this game and they want their voice to be heard. And so that is the reason why you see that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And just one of those other reasons that this game has feet already is the fact that I think the community is already huge. But what we're seeing now is only a fraction, I think, of what it's going to be in the long term, which is super exciting. Let's cover some of the other Friday updates, if you will, since we've recorded last. The first of which is the top secret dossier on the Imperial agent.
This was awesome.
So I didn't get the chance to like really, really read through this. So why don't you go ahead and kind of run.
Okay. The only thing I have to say is the one person that comes to mind reading this article
Sam is Fisher. Michael Weston. Oh, Michael Weston. That works too. For those of you who watch Burn Notice.
Well, the thing is it talks about the Sith agent kind of being the guy that goes to the extravagant parties. That's like really well connected. There's not only just assassinating people that has to like get info, espionage, spying, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I just keep thinking of like Michael Weston and Burn Notice this whole time happening. And it's talking about how like you can have a love life or not have one, so to speak. And
So, I mean, this really is the balance to the smuggler on the Sith side in that respect.
Yeah. More or less. Interesting thing about this. We'll talk about this in a minute. There was a new planet that was, also announced, and I kind of thought that new planet, which was
Droman Kos.
Yeah, Droman Kos. I thought that was probably going to be the starting zone for.
I think you're right.
But for the Imperial agent. But no, I don't think I'm right because when you read through this this dossier sort of thing, they've got like an article or they have like a paragraph where they have a bunch of inked out blots.
Right.
Specific things, kind of like see if you're looking at a top agent. Or a secret agent, top secret file.
Where it all and says it starts on Hutta, where blank blank is trying to blank the blank.
The Hut, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. But the fact that the phrase, it all starts on Hutta, kind of tells me, I think maybe the Imperial agent might be starting off on Hutta.
Yeah, I mean, that's based on what we have here, that's a totally reasonable assumption.
It also kind of hints at maybe what one of your companion characters could be when it says he works alongside a genetically engineered blank.
Yeah. Yeah.
Encounter double agents and triple agents. Betray blank, 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 or perform
atrocities in the name of the Empire. That's pretty cool. I mean, this is definitely a class that I haven't really seen in another game. I think there's going to be a whole lot of standing back. And a whole lot of planning and just getting involved in a totally different aspect
thing about
of combat.
This class is this kind of takes the typical role of what you would say is the rogue and the ranger and combining them together.
Exactly.
Like the character that's just afraid or not afraid to get sneaky and dirty and do all those tricksy things, I guess you would say, as Gollum would put it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're long range and you're just like the guy that's standing way off in the distance and like the ranger would. So I think that this class is combining the core mechanics of both either a thief slash rogue or ranger slash hunter.
Yeah, I think is really exciting. And it's not going to appeal to like everybody, but I think there's a very developed group of people who follow Star Wars who have no desire to be a Jedi who don't want to like throw electricity into somebody who this class is very much going to appeal to.
Oh yeah.
And you know, like I said earlier, I've been playing Global Agenda, and to quote Emlay from Darth Hater, it's like a third distant kind of retarded cousin in terms of combat to what it looks like Tor is going to be. But for anyone who's played that, this to me looks very much kind of like the engineerish class in Global Agenda, or I mean even in an abstract kind of way, the engineer from TF2, but with so many more options,
yeah,
and so many more abilities, and such an awesome story.
Well, not only that, you got to look at the whole stealth mechanics involved with the class, and I imagine you're going to see some type of trap mechanics to where you can set or disable traps, mm-hmm, things like that, especially with all the gadgetry involved, because it talks about that it's primarily going to be a long-range sniper rifle kind of class with gadgetry on the side, and I imagine that's what you would see the gadgets for, setting up traps, creating little knickknacks that are just going to piss people off.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be a super cool class, and I mean, who doesn't want to get involved in espionage and black ops and
whole bunch of stuff? Storyline is going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
Like so, we've talked about in the past, I think you're going to see a lot of backstabbing and political things, and you're probably trying to live the normal life. Like I said, like if you watch Burn Notice, like I could easily see like this being like a Michael Weston-esque type character, and throw it in the Star Wars universe, and or even James Bond. If you're not familiar with Burn Notice.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with dramas on USA. Which most people aren't.
No.
Anyways,
Verno's is awesome.
It is. You mentioned earlier the new planet that we have announced, Droman Kos, which as a rich detailed history, but is going to be basically the seat of Imperial power in the world or in the universe. This planet is awesome. What are your thoughts so far?
Well, the funny thing about this, when you read the history of this planet, is like the Sith basically discovered it when they were just doing a bunch of blind hyperspace jumps.
You got to go even further back. This was colonized a long, long, long time ago by the Sith. And then they built like these temples with ridiculous dark power. And then more or less, they lost the planet.
Yeah.
And then it was after the Great Hyperspace War when the Sith were really kind of struggling to keep themselves around, that they eventually just decided, we want to find this thing. We have no idea where it is, so we're just going to blindly jump around the universe and see if we can find it again. And they did.
Well, they did, which made it look like, it makes it sound like it's one of those hidden type secret bases, which is what I was getting at. It's kind of interesting because it's almost like the reverse scenario of Episode 4, where you've got the Rebel Alliance hiding on these secret bases, and everyone knows where the Galactic Empire is, and they're just there and they're out in the open, but right, no one wants to attack them, so to speak, because they're so powerful. It's almost like you've got a reverse situation here, where the Galactic Republic in this situation, everyone knows they're on Coruscant, and
right,
that's where you go for the Republic. They're not hiding or anything like that, but you've got the Sith and they almost have this established secret base. I don't know.
This thing doesn't show up on star charts at all. Like nobody knows where the hell this planet is,
which makes it
perfect for the Sith to make as their like central space of power.
And like I said, initially I thought this could have been a starting planet for the Imperial agent, but I don't think that's the case.
I mean, the little overview says, it's here that the Empire's power brokering games are played and alliances are forged and broken. For up-and-coming moffs and Imperial intelligence operatives, success and survival hangs on the ability to master these games of intrigue. So, I mean, if not a starting planet, at least like an early game kind of planet. Beyond agents... The fact that this place has temples just riddled with dark force power, this is going to be a huge draw for like infiltrator or not. God, I'm an idiot. Inquisitors, I think this is going to be a huge quest hub for Sith Inquisitors.
Well, an interesting thing too is like you end up on this planet as being a member of the Galactic Republic. It's probably going to be one of those situations where you're always looking over your shoulder.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you're like a smuggler who ends up on this planet, which is what I would guess would be the most likely people on the quote unquote light side to end up on this planet, you're gonna be pretty worried most of the time that you're gonna get taken out. But I mean, other than that, it's like a jungle planet with a whole bunch of cities.
It's like an imperial palace.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
Are you talking about the concept art?
Concept art. Yeah, I keep forgetting it's not an actual screenshot, but it kind of reminds me of something from, I don't know if you played Killzone 2, but it looks like, it kind of reminds me of something from that. It's like, it's
right,
kind of got like this Nazi Empire type, I guess you'd say, touch to it, where it feels like they've taken things from World War II, like the Nazi regime from the World War II, and maybe added that. Like, when I talk about, like, you've got these gigantic red banners with the imperial symbol, like, right in the middle of it, and just these towering buildings and stuff like that, and a very military-esque kind of layout.
Yeah, this concept art has actually been around for quite a while, and a lot of people were speculating that this planet was actually going to be Zyost, which is another one of those planets that's just like ridden with dark force power. But it's like covered in ice. So I mean this concept art is a little bit kind of iffy.
What do you think story wise we'll get from this planet? Because we kind of talked about what we would expect if, you know, because BioWare is emphasizing a lot on story as being the fourth pillar. And
of course, yeah.
That every planet that gets released is going to impact the story in some way, shape, or form. What specifically do you think this will target? Do you think this will only target certain classes, or do you think that everyone at some point in time will be, their storyline will be affected by this planet?
I don't know if everybody is going to end up on here. You know, they talk specifically about how this is a just a center of darkness and like, mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of stuff. So if we look at some of the like the concept arts, the last two or the second to last one has like a dark Jedi of some form, and like a force ghost outside of this temple, which is, looks really menacing. And then the next one has like a dark Jedi and a light Jedi facing off. And I know dark Jedi is not really the right word, but whatever. So. You know, I think you're going to see a lot of focus on this temple and the power that it has, and you know, the like we talked about with the Jedi Knight, who's going to be the type of person who's going out and like dispensing justice, is going to be probably popping up on here as well as the.
I want a T-shirt that has a Jedi on it that says
dispensing justice. You know, as well as the Consular. This is going to be a force heavy planet.
Yeah.
Is bottom line, as far as I'm concerned.
I think once again, this is going to be another gorgeous planet. It's going to have some kind of touches of Yavin 4, maybe touches of Dagobah. Talks about it being a jungle planet, things like that. So probably, I bet you in the major cities, it'll be fairly populated, but outside of that, everything will be remote about the planet.
There's some, from what I understand, there's some pretty like sketchy native creatures that are on this planet. So that's going to be pretty cool. One of the other things that our listeners on the forum pointed out was this is one of the other instances of like a landing pad and like a ship. If you watch the fly through video. So, you know, LucasArts BioWare obviously knows that space and space combat is a huge draw for this game. And, you know, that's. It's maybe a hint at one of the things.
It's maybe a hint. I kind of wouldn't get my expectations.
I wouldn't either.
Much on that. I kind of feel like that could be in the game, but I feel like I think we would have heard something by now.
I think so, you're right, but still.
I think a lot of that, just when you see spaceship and landing pads and things like that, I think there's obviously going to have to be a system of travel in between these planets.
Right. If nothing else, it's that.
I think that's probably on the surface what it is. You go to a landing pad, you get on a ship, and then you tell the ship where you want it to take you, and then it'll take you to the landing pad of that planet.
Right, right. I mean, it could be any number of things.
Or it could be a way you could travel around the planet. I mean, that would be kind of cool if you get on a ship and you're at point A on the planet and you want to get to point B. So if you've already discovered point B's landing pad, you could take a shuttle from that, from point A to point B, so to speak.
Right.
And like, you could either physically fly there, kind of like taking a Griffin in World of Warcraft, and you could like look at the landscape as you're flying over, or it could just kind of teleport you there to the other one, and you wouldn't have the travel time. But that would be kind of a cool way to implement travel in this game.
Uh-huh.
But that could be something when you see all of these landing pads and ships on these landing pads that could be what they're going to intend on using those for. Or yeah, maybe it's just like a static object and it's not going to have any
just impact for environment. So. Yeah, I mean, it could be any number of different things. But I mean, bottom line, I think this planet's going to be really heavy on the Force users. And, you know, just this like awesome juxtaposition between like skyscrapers and the jungle and the forest around it just looks super cool. So everybody be sure to hop over to the Holonet and check out all the screenshots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
well, I can get you more on that.
Yeah. And the most recent update from this past weekend that we got was another Fan Friday, which a lot of people aren't really fans of. I hate puns. Anyways, they featured some fan art and fan fiction from the community, which is freaking awesome. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting was this developer corner section that they added.
Yeah.
And they've got a video here of Balmora, which we, you know, we discussed quite a while ago, but it's this like really cool like force field over a city that it looks like it's getting shot from space. Who even begins to know what this means in terms of story, but it looks super cool. The first thing that came to mind was the force field over Dalaran in World of Warcraft, like Dalaran before it moved, if anybody remembers that. Did you have any idea?
Oh, well, this is kind of something about? Like, I don't know if you saw the Clone Wars movie before the TV show came out, but they had a scene in the Clone Wars movie where they established this force field, which protected them from some sort of orbital bombardment. If I'm thinking right, it was from the movie. It could have been from the TV show, but it just reminds me of something like that. And it talks about specifically the scene we're watching is over an Imperial city and it's protecting it from rebel bombardment, which is kind of, well, not rebel, but Republic, which is kind of interesting because it really, it's kind of like one of those things you would think that the Republic wouldn't just necessarily bombard a city,
which is full of like people working civilians. In a base, like civilians. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. So I don't know if that's the case that this is a city with civilians in it, or if this
that's,
is
that's what that's what it says. An inner base in the Soberkill Valley where townspeople work in the military base under the watchful eyes of Imperial troopers. So, I mean, the fact that they're just shooting it is is a little sketch from a Republic standpoint. You know, it
sounds like something you would expect to hear that the Sith Empire to be pulling off, not something the Galactic Republic would be.
Which, you know, I think just kind of goes to show, you know, the dire straits of where the Republic is when we're getting into this game.
You know,
which is cool.
You know what would be kind of cool is if this force field isn't always on. It's only just randomly at certain times that they have to activate it, kind of like.
Or there's a quest to activate it, or well, not, you have to like.
Not so much that. For more immersive purposes, let's just say it's kind of like if you were in London during World War II, and like they would randomly have, sometimes it wouldn't be for random, it would be like the real thing, but they would basically have these alarms that would go off and say like, we're about to get bombarded by enemy bombers, so everyone basically takes shelter. So it'd be kind of like one of those things where it's not like continuously happening. It's just like it kind of happens and everyone's like, oh, geez, we're about to like have a bombardment come down. And then like the shield activates and you're underneath it. And all of a sudden you just see all of this artillery fire just start hitting it. So like you're underneath it. It's almost like it'd be like rain, so to speak, like an umbrella, like protecting you from rain. That's kind of like the visual it would have being underneath it. But it'd be really cool if it wasn't like continuously happening. So you could go to that city and it'd be fine. And then all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, you'd hear sirens activate and the shield would like extend. And then all of a sudden the bombardment would just take place. So it would kind of like make you feel, it'd make it feel more immersive. Like it just wasn't always happening. Cause
yeah.
I mean, while the rebels are, or the Republic is going to bombard a target, it's not going to happen 24/7. So it's just like, that would become like a running joke, so to speak. It's like, yeah, the planet where the rebels just never run out of ammunition.
Yeah. You know, I taking that immersion level even further, I would love to see something like, you know, we already know that Balmora is going to be a planet that's kind of struggling for control.
Yeah, between those sides.
Right. And I would love to see, you know, quests based around keeping control of that city. And, you know, so maybe maybe on the Empire side, you know, if you don't have a group of people who can like put in enough whatever XYZ quest initiatives to get the shield up, then for X amount of time, the city gets turned over in control to the Republic.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
You can have an objective, like if you are a part of the Republic, that you have to get into the city and disable the shield.
Right. Right. Something
can happen.
Yeah. Where
if you did that, then it would have like an impact on the city for a time or
yeah,
or something like that.
That's something that's at least conceptually really easy to do. And I love that stuff. Yeah.
But the thing is like, it's one thing to have world PvP, but it's another when you make that PvP have a purpose. And like,
right.
I've always been a big, I enjoy going around attacking a random guy from the other team and, you know, having fun with that. But it's really cool if there's an objective that people want to group together and say, we all need to go into this city and attack it on a grand scale for this reason. And like reward players for doing that and giving them an objective to meet. So that way they have something to focus on. I feel like in games that I've played, now I haven't really played a lot of Warhammer Online, so I never really got to try out how the world city raids were going to be. So that's the only game that I can think of where they really went out of their way to focus on world PvP and have like massive tasks at hand. I don't know how that turned out. But in other games that I have played, it's just kind of been blah. It's like, okay, there's this guy. Wouldn't it be fun if we could just kill that guy and everyone works on doing that? But aside from that, the game was never really designed for that. So like looking at this and saying, okay, the world PvP objective for the Republic is to go into this town, deactivate the shield, however tough it may be, that's your objective. You get in there and you do that and allows, you know, planetary bombardment to continue onto the city.
Yeah.
And yeah, that would just give you all the more immersiveness and it would give you like an actual purpose for having that world PvP take place to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, this is really a place where BioWare LucasArts can totally step it up and take it to the next level. You know, I was playing Star Trek Online, the beta last week. And, you know, for as much as Cryptic wanted to promise like unique quests and stuff like that, at the end of the day, it was more or less just the same old, same old. And I'm just getting tired of it.
Well, you know, I have, that's one, another thing too. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of quests they establish for this game and what it's kind of different. Because I think one thing that I'm kind of excited about is that they're going out on a limb with this whole storytelling thing in an MMO. The other thing I kind of worried about is like that's their one big thing they're going to do and they're not really going to branch off from much more than that. So,
well, I think that's what this whole next year, you know, now that we're like we talked about before, now that we're into 2011, mm-hmm. we have this whole next year, to really establish how, you know, combat is going to be different and how exploration is going to be different and how advancement is going to be different.
And that's the thing about quests is that's something they could kind of design at any point in time.
Right.
You know, they could always add new quests, even up to probably weeks right before the game launches. They could probably change the way quests works. So that, yeah, like you said, that is kind of nice that we have a little bit more, they have a little bit more time, I guess you'd say, to work with this game. And they can go through and look at playtesting. And maybe if people are complaining about the lack of unique quests that are available, like I've heard some people complain that there's a lot of fetch quests from what they played already.
Yep.
A lot of go kill these kind of creature quest, kill this target quest, destroy this thing, and that's about it.
But I mean, that gameplay was probably at least a year old at this point.
Yeah. And like it, designing the game is what's is important early on. Once you get the, like the core, I guess you would say, game created, you can pretty much fundamentally add new quests on top of that, and it shouldn't be a big issue.
Yeah.
You can change the way the quests flow or work, or you know what you have to do. You don't have to just do kill quests, but that's probably the cookie cutter type thing that's they've already got in
yeah.
place.
Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be that kind of stuff in the game. It's not, it's something you should expect, but it's how they break that up with more unique quests.
Yeah.
How they approach the kill this, get this quest.
The pacing involved with it.
Yeah, it's all about pacing, and if anybody can come along and change the way that it's been done for the past 5 or 6 years, it's BioWare, who are kings of RPG and story and pacing.
And like playing through Dragon Age, you know, I know that basically they do have kill quests, but they can present those in a unique way to where just this is cool. Like, all I'm doing is killing these guys, but I'm having a lot of fun doing it, so.
Yeah, so speaking of customization, the last little bit of this Fan Friday update was a bunch of like facial customization. So they had like scars and burns and like crazy red stuff around the eyes. So this is pretty cool. I mean, nothing like game changing or anything like that, but it just another example of some of the customization that we're going to be able to have in this game. I'd be curious if this is stuff that's available like at the character creation or stuff that like actually happens to you based on choices you make in the game.
The other thing I'd be curious about too is are they going to allow you to recustomize the look of your character?
I mean, I don't know. It's something that WoW obviously, it, brought into the game
about that.
I mean they brought it in at one point and they made a huge deal about it. I really hope that's not something they're considering out of the gate. I don't think it matters that much, and I think
well,
the
only
team
reason
recognizes
why I say
that
is I hope this isn't going to be the case where like when you look at games already that allow recustomization at with your character basically based on his appearance, it kind of makes sense, but the stuff that they showed us here is basically physical scarring. It's not the kind of thing that you should be able to just go and recustomize. Like, okay, I decided like this burn on my face is like annoying, so I'm going to go to like my left side of the face instead of the right side.
Yeah.
And like this scar that I have along the side of my cheek, I'd rather have going through my eye at this point. It's just like that doesn't make a lot of sense. So I wonder. Like stuff like this, they should allow you to pick from the very beginning and you can't change, but other things they should allow you to change at some point throughout the game, I feel
yeah, like. Yeah, I'll agree with that. In the event that they do put it in the game from the beginning, like I said, I would love for these things to be like effects based on choices that you make. So say you're like some Sith Inquisitor and you know you're doing some kind of something dark and it ends up going really wrong and you've got like this burn on your face as a mark of that. That stuff would be super cool. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, that stuff is awesome. So as with everything we talk about in news from the Galactic Republic, head on over to the HoloNet. It's all there. Some really exciting stuff in the past couple of weeks. So we would invite everyone to check that out. So on that, I think we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with the poll of the week. So the poll of the week this week, a little episode pre-poll business. We wanted to know how many hours a week you game. You know, we've got, as I said in the little pre-poll audio thing, you know, we've got listeners from all different backgrounds, people playing anywhere from like 5 hours to like 40 hours of games a week. We wanted to know kind of how that broke down. And I actually ended up being quite surprised with the number of quote unquote hardcore listeners that we had, which was actually split even with moderate players at 38%. So we broke it down, hardcore 25 plus, moderate 15 to 25, casual 5 to 15, which came in at 19%, and then very casual was 0 to 5. So what were your thoughts on this, Zach? I thought this was actually pretty interesting.
Well, actually, I'm not surprised that I would say the majority of the people are hardcore or moderately hardcore, I should say, just based on that term alone. Because, like I was saying earlier, I think a lot of people that are interested in this game right now tend to be hardcore MMO players or people that invest a lot of time into it. And so it doesn't surprise me that a lot of people that listen to the show are, I guess you'd say, hardcore gamers.
Yeah, I thought it was, like I said, I thought it was pretty interesting. We actually had comments from a listener named Kim who actually challenged us on the phrase hardcore, and I thought it was awesome. You know, because we equated quote unquote hardcore with just like an hour or like a time involvement, and you know, she was talking about how it was really more of a play style, how you know, you can play 40 hours a week and not necessarily be hardcore about a game. And you know, I suppose that's kind of true. There are people who just kind of get in and like to explore, maybe do a little bit of dungeon stuff, and then get out, and it's not like a huge aspect of their life. Whereas other people will like raid every single night and be talking strats and yeah. You know, sit and invent. And you know, I think
maybe hardcore is not exactly the term we want, but is more, yeah. It's something that is basically, it takes up a good majority of your free time.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's a lot of people that do game a lot. And someone might consider them a hardcore gamer, but they're not necessarily gung-ho about gaming and trying to be the best that they can be, and that's why they game so much. It's just more of it's a way they socialize with other people, or it's right. A way they have interaction, and that's why they game as much as they do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was just proof that, you know, hardcore, which is a term that gets thrown around a lot in gaming yeah. circles, is really kind of gray. You know, I think you can play like 10 hours a week and still be hardcore about a game. You know, I remember there's a period of time when I was playing WoW relatively frequently. I was just getting into raiding, but, you know, I had a kid in one of my classes that we would just sit there and the entire period talk about like MC strats. And, you know, we would like break down each boss and talk about progression and weapons and stuff like that. And, you know, I wasn't necessarily playing 40 hours a week, but I was like hardcore yeah. into the game, which is cool. So everybody has their different background. But as always, we want to thank everybody who took the time to head over to the website and vote in the poll and leave us comments. Great discussion. Super cool.
Bam. Thank you.
Exactly. So let's wrap up here. Yeah, with some email questions. The first one comes from Reliant, and he asked us, do you think typical MMO players like having well-defined group roles for their class, or do you think they will adapt well to being able to change their combat role through changing traits or talents or by summoning a companion? I think this is actually a really great question because of the fact that at this point, most of us are so ingrained in the traditional Trinity with tanking and DPS and healing. That I don't know. I think this is going to be a different aspect that's being brought into RPGs.
Let's put it this way. I think that's what everybody wants. I think everybody's dying to have something that's completely different and breaks the norm and everything. But it's one of those things to where sometimes people complain about it so much. I don't know if that's really what everyone wants as a, I guess you'd say as a whole, like, I'm trying to think here, like how basically you've got your established classes and your roles, like ranged DPS, melee DPS, healing, beefy character that takes a lot of damage, things like that. And there's been a lot of games that have broke those molds, but they've just been unsuccessful for various reasons. One that comes to mind was Tabula Rasa. And you start off as everyone is basically the same entry level class, and you just continuously branch off from that to becoming you get like multiple options is where you would want to go, and then you get to branch off from that to even more specific sub options, and it just kind of like, I don't know, the flow system just didn't it didn't work out right because it seemed like everything was too familiar. Like all the classes were too similar, things like that.
Uh-huh.
I guess what I'm saying is I think a lot of the typical MMO players like having defined classes that do special things because I think they want to be able to focus in one specific area that's clearly different than another person that's focusing in a specific area. And they don't like people stepping on their toes or stepping on other people's toes. So, like, if their role is to do this, you know, it's like we will all want to be able to like have all this custom ability. But at the same time, like, if your role is to heal, then you don't have to worry about someone else that's like, yeah, I partially heal and partially DPS, kind of step on your toes. Because you're just like, no, that's all I do is heal. So, I don't know. Like, we want something different. Like, I want different mechanics. I want to see them kind of break this mold. But at the same time, it's like, if they give us that, is that really what we're going to want? Are we going to be happy with it? Are we going to like the idea that we all play classes that are fairly similar in what they do? It's just kind of like the execution is what's different. I mean, basically, if you're killing someone with a lightsaber or killing someone with an assault rifle, you're still killing someone. It's just kind of like how you do it.
Well, I think that's where the distinction comes in and where that's actually going to be okay in the end. You know, I think the only reason that this is a question at this point for this game is the fact that we're so used to those roles and, you know, we're so used to being able to say, I'm the tank, that's what I do, don't mess with my playstyle, you know, and I think to a certain extent, as we've said before, those same kind of roles are still going to pop up a little bit in Tor. But I think once people actually get their hands on the classes and really kind of see how each class is truly uniquely different from the other one, it's really going to kind of be a non-issue.
Well, here's the thing. He basically says, do you think MMO players like having defined roles in groups? And I think they do. But I think if everyone has similar roles within a group, it kind of makes you just have to focus on being the best player that you can.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, like, let's just say the healer is sucking and the group falls apart. Everyone kind of just won't go, well, I'm doing my job. It's just the healer that sucks. And, like, basically then people will stop trying, I guess you would say. But in this like scenario that they're talking about, and what he's talking about in this question, and what we're all kind of speculating is that pretty much anyone will be able to fill any role. It'll just be kind of executed differently.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it to where if a person is struggling, it's not like, well, there's no way we're going to get through this because our healer's awful. You know what I'm saying? It's like somebody else is like, well, I'll do this. And then you can just focus on that. Like, I'll focus on crowd controlling and damage mitigation, and you just focus on dealing damage.
Yeah, I like what you're saying, which is basically the fact that, you know, group roles don't necessarily have to be defined by class.
Yeah.
And I think Tor is going to be a perfect example of that idea where, you know, you may have a group of like three Jedi, a smuggler, and a trooper, and, you know, the three Jedi obviously have the same similar abilities at least, but they may end up doing completely different things based on, you know, what kind of encounter you're facing or what job but needs to be done.
It's not even that so much as it can make it to where if a player isn't as good, it's okay.
That's all that too.
To where other players can pick up that slack. Cause like I'm saying, if you're weak player and let's just say you've got the three triangle system, if your weak player is the tank, then the whole group will suffer from it. Or if your weak player is the healer, then the whole group is going to suffer from it. And no matter how good of a DPSer you are or how good of a tank you are, if your healer is not keeping your guys alive, then your group will fail.
Yeah.
Whereas this, let's just say, the fact that you can possibly change what he's talking about, and this is what we're all speculating, we don't know yet.
Right.
Of course, because they haven't released any information on the combat mechanics. But let's just say you could change your role on the fly. So if there is that guy that's struggling at basically tanking, someone else will go, well, I'm just going to go on and kind of be more of a tanking figure for right now. Mm-hmm. You just focus on DPSing, and that's all you've got to do. And so that way, instead of having to reform the whole group or suffering with a group that just can't get through anything, you just change the roles around a little bit. And like all the classes might be able to do this because there's not anything that's clearly defined as a tank or as a healer in this game. So because of that, if a guy's a trooper and he's struggling at tanking or being the lead damage mitigator, I guess you would say, you could have a guy that's playing a Jedi Knight go, well, I'm just going to do that. You just focus on DPSing and we'll be cool.
Right. Right. And, you know, I think it's just going to take all of us approaching combat from a completely different perspective. And I'm sure that BioWare LucasArts has already integrated that into game through, you know, like basically your intro tutorial and stuff like that. You know, this isn't something they're just going to throw us in there and say, oh, you got to do different things and just kind of figure it out on your own. It's going to work out just fine, I think.
That being said, I do think, though, a lot of MMO players like having defined roles just so that a way when somebody sucks that
they can place blame.
Yeah, they can place blame.
Yeah. I think if for the people who still want to do that, who don't want to take responsibility, it is. But I think there's still going to be kind of that, you know, in that person who maybe just doesn't really get like stunning or some other ability that their class has.
Yeah.
It's always going to come up anywhere. But I think Tor is going to have enough of a different approach that
it's not going to hurt the group.
Exactly. It's going to work out just fine.
Yeah.
Speaking of stunning and stuff, Mitchell Whiting. God, I'm terrible with names. Mitchell Whiting. Let's go with that.
Okay.
Asked us, with all the stun and sleep moves, I just don't think PvP is going to be very action packed. Which is basically just going to be like stunning everybody. How do you guys think PvP will work? Do you think all the classes should have a stun ability? You know,
okay. I mean, they have, like we just said, they haven't at all talked about the combat specifics so far in this game.
Besides the fact that we do know that there is a lot of like stunning and sleeping, but that's because
the one thing they haven't talked about, and Sleeper kind of hinted at last week, or maybe it was Deacon, I can't remember, but diminishing returns.
Right.
And it might not be so much. In a lot of games now, it's kind of like if you stun someone and then you try to stun them again, basically the effect is diminished because you've already done it once. They could kind of do something differently to whereas if you've been stunned once, then someone else tries to stun you again, that effect will be diminished. So it may not be so much, I guess you say diminishing returns might not go so much against the caster as the person it's being casted upon.
Right. So it's more of a generic thing as opposed to limited to just which player is attacking you.
I'm just speculating.
I mean, this is something that we really have no idea about. But I mean, the only thing that we know for sure is the fact that their approach to combat is based on stunning and damage mitigation and things like that. And
which I'm kind of cool with. I think
I'm totally cool with.
Well, the reason why I say that too is because it's like you said, it's going to, not only is this game changing the way we're going to look at PvE, but it could change the way we look at PvP, and you're not going to just focus on the taking down the healers. And you have these fights where it's just people won't die because you've got so many people, healing to where it's impossible to kill anyone.
Right.
So to speak.
Right.
Which is not entirely the most realistic approach when you think about it.
Yeah.
So, there are a lot of stuns. I don't necessarily think that that's going to cripple gameplay. And in fact, you're going to have to be really coordinated just to like stun the entire team at the same time. It's not going to be the kind of thing where if you're just playing random pug PvPs or playing with random PvP groups, that where everyone's just going to be like, okay, stun, 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 stun. Everyone targets a different guy and does it at the same time. Or it's just, you know, constant, like, basically stun fest. I don't think that's going to happen. I think you're going to have a lot of people trying to stun the same targets, and it's not going to impact the game as much as a lot of people are speculating.
Yeah.
Before
we go any further, I know we got this question like before we talked about the Designing the Dark Side video last week, and that video has a good amount of clips of people playing PvP, and just from that alone, it's fast paced, and there's a lot of stuff going on, and you know, like we talked about, there's hints of diminishing returns and abilities to break stuns and stuff like that, just from that footage alone, which is still technically early, I was super excited about the pace of PvP and how cool it looked at this point. I didn't know if you had anything else to add, though.
No, you pretty much...
Okay, cool. Our third question is actually an audio question, which we freaking love, from a guy named Axel, who on the forums goes as Slartibartfest. Man, that is a fantastic forum name that just cripples my ability to speak.
By the way, I just want to say we really appreciate you being involved with the forums.
Oh, dude.
He's been heavily involved the past couple weeks.
Yeah, which I finally got back on a little bit. I'm going to try to be better about being on the forums. I just suck at life. Anyways, here's his question. We'll answer his questions on the other side.
Yo, Second Brook. This is Slardy Bartfest from the forums coming at you from New Zealand. I've just got a couple of questions I thought I'd dish your way. My first question is concerning languages. I know they haven't officially announced any other races than humans, but when they do you think they'll announce languages for them as well, just like many other MMOs? My second question is about cross-faction conversations. Do you think that in the few moments where Sith and the Republic meet without actually butchering each other, cross-faction conversations will be possible? Or do you think that the text will be rendered unreadable? I know I would at least enjoy dishing out some cheesy line before dispatching a Jedi, or perhaps being the sneaky Imperial agent that I am, try to convince a smuggler to take my side. That's all from the Southern Hemisphere. Love your podcast, guys. Keep up the great work. Cheers.
So his first question was about languages. Do we think that there's going to be anything other than human languages in the game? I think he's talking about from a player's perspective.
I don't know if that's going to be the case or not, because it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense, I feel like, at this point, because Star Wars, like from all the movies we've seen, all these different creatures interact with each other in their native language, and it's like every creature understands the other creature's native language, but they don't necessarily respond in it. You think of like Han Solo interacting with Jabba the Hutt.
Or Guido.
Guido,
yeah. Know, why did I say Guido?
Like, Guido?
Sorry.
Carizian.
Yeah.
Like, Yim Nub in Return of the Jedi, where he's like, Nim Nim Nab Tim Nim Nab Nim Nim.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, don't worry, my friends are down there. He'll have that shield down on time. And it's like, oh, that's totally what he said. I understood that, you know?
Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like if they put language barriers in this game, it kind of takes away something that is Star Wars.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially if you're telling stories, and we've already seen this in the Bounty Hunter developer blog, where like some Rodian type creature, I don't think it was a Rodian, but right. Someone was talking to them and he was speaking in another language and everyone could understand him. Uh-huh. So that'd be kind of dumb if they're like, oh, you know, this guy's speaking Huttese, but you can't understand him because you're not on the Sith side. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah. So, I mean, to separate his two questions, I think obviously we're going to have like alien languages in the game with subtitles to go along with those in terms of like story stuff and your different quests. But between factions, like you said, it would kind of lose something if you don't have that. I think since the fact that everybody understands pretty much everybody else is so ingrained in the in Star Wars, you know, from everything from, you know, the most recent Clone Wars animated series all the way back to Episode 4, you know, that's just a thing. That's what happens. So I think it would be super cool to have cross-faction talking conversations.
I think it'd be cool. I understand why they don't, just because it results in a lot of taunting and basically people resorting to immature levels.
Yeah, which you yourself are not above. I'm not either. I remember spending hours and hours one weekend trying to figure out like the conversion in letters between like the Horde side and the Alliance side once, and it ended up being like different letters would combine into different things, and I think I have a screenshot somewhere of me saying something lewd.
So
anyways,
telling stories about things we used to do to piss off the opposing faction in World of Warcraft. There was a time where you could at least, I don't know if you can still do this or not, but there was a time where you could mind control someone with a side. And then if you had a buddy with you, he could taunt him. And like he could read everything you said because like when you mind control someone, basically he would become a Horde player if you were a Horde.
Yeah.
And so he could read your language, so you could like taunt the guy and then release control, and he had no way of like responding to that.
Didn't you also get like banned for like 3 hours or something for mind controlling people and running them off like the big towers and Thousand Needles?
In the game, and like one of the early, this is like the week it came out, and like I kept getting people to duel me, and then I'd make their character run off the mountain. And not only would it kill them, but like the ghost path to run back to your character, because in that game, if you haven't played World of Warcraft, when you die, you start at a graveyard at a random spot in the map or in the world, kind of close, the closest one to where your body is, and you have to walk all the way back to it. Well, if you fall off in an unfamiliar area, it's like good luck walking back to your body, because you don't know your way around the zone. And like I would throw people off like one zone into another zone, but I'd throw them off side, and so like people would die and end up in a zone where they had no idea how to get back to their body, and I basically got a ban put on me for griefing, which I was like, they dueled me, it wasn't, yeah. I didn't force them to do that.
Good times. I hope we can have that kind of stuff,
stories about that, like stuff like that happening in this game.
Dude, it's gonna be freaking awesome.
I know. I'm gonna have a bounty so large on my head within like 2 weeks of the game.
Yeah, you will. So, again, thanks to everybody for the questions. As always, we love those. You can send them into mossisleyradio@gmail.com. Just like regular questions or audio questions. We'll play them as long as they're not like vulgar. And even then, we might let it through just because it's funny. So yeah, I think that's gonna about wrap it up for us, unless you had anything else you wanted to touch on, Zach.
No, I'm good, I think.
Cool.
Cool beans. Have you seen Hot Rod?
It's been a long time, but yes. Before we leave, I want to throw out a huge thanks to Axel Lars and Jeffrey Duke for leaving us reviews on iTunes. That's super cool. It helps our rating over there. Thanks so much for spending the time to go out and do that. That's awesome.
Yep. We appreciate it.
We do.
Also, if you want to contact us, there's several ways you can do it. Either mossisleyradio@gmail.com. If you have any questions or MP3 questions you want to send us, that's one way you can do it. We also take Twitter questions as well. You can find us on twitter.com/mossisleyradio, or you can just head on over to the website at mossisleyradio.com, either comment section or the forums as well, and we'll respond there or try to. There's a lot of cool people in the forums. So
absolutely.
If you think you want to get involved in the community, I highly encourage it.
Yeah, I feel like I had another forum shout out, but I totally forgot about it. Either way, everybody over there is freaking awesome. That's gonna be it for us this week. We're working on a really sweet guest for an upcoming episode. We'll keep you guys posted on that, the more we know. And yeah, so keep it classy. We'll talk to you guys later.
Take it easy. I'm getting like an ear infection.
That sounds like fun.
Dude, my ear is killing me. It's like, hey, you want to be more uncomfortable? Hey.
And I'm sports, like, sports! You'll be good at them. Are you ready?
I will be in a second.
Okay. Ow.
What was that?
I like turned my head and my microphone got caught on my pop guard. Like the microphone on my headset got caught on my pop guard for the real microphone. And I'm a moron is the moral of the story there.
Hold on. I'm trying to get my lightsaber that's a lighter.
Oh my god.
Freaking bear. You hear that?
Yes, I hear it.
Doesn't that sound awesome?
It sounds like fire.
But it's coming out of a lightsaber.
Why do I even talk to you anymore? Okay, you ready?